Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. We are back once again. And as always, I'm here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
Doing really good. How are you? How was your
week? Good. How was your weekend? You been relaxing?
For the most part, yeah, I've just been watching movies and hanging out, and I was outside a little bit. We had beautiful weather up in Portland, Oregon today, which is a nice change. Hopefully we'll continue to get some sunshine and as we move into the summer.
Yes, that would be wonderful. I like it when it's in the mid-60s, no later than maybe, no hotter than the mid-70s. I don't know. As I'm getting older, I like it with the cooler weather.
Yeah, once it starts getting past the mid-70s, I tend to find myself being inside more. I do not like the heat. I do not handle it well, particularly when it gets up into the 90s or 100s. It's like...
Yeah, definitely. It's so true. I mean, it seems like it's older... We get in Jason is I don't have much tolerance. And I remember when I was young, I'll be out there, you know, when I went to college and in high school, I would go lay out in the sun for 8 hours a day and just, you know, use Bandy Soleil and just get as dark as I could and just bake and bake and bake. But, you know, my skin, I'm becoming more mindful of what I'm putting on my body. And, you know, a little bit of sun is good, but again, it's moderation.
It's funny how with everything in life, it's always got to be in moderation. You know, you drink too much water, you can die. You know, you get too much sun, increase your chances for skin cancer. Everything in moderation.
Exactly. Exactly. And I was reading, you know, as a former makeup artist, you know, I'm really picky about ingredients. And a lot of the sunscreens now that are out there, it's really, really, just because they have SPF, you know, 15, SPF 20, 30, 45, 50, whatever the amount, if you look at the ingredients and you really derive, you have this dictionary and you actually look at what's in there, if you, it is a general rule, is that if you cannot pronounce the ingredients, it's not good for you. Because you don't know what you're putting on the skin. You know, your skin is your biggest organ of your body and it absorbs right into the bloodstream. So it's interesting how people will say, well, you need to use sunscreen. Well, that's great if it's organic, but if it's got a bunch of chemicals, and especially if you can't pronounce it, it's not good for you. So I don't know. That would be probably under conspiracy theory.
It's funny. I don't think a lot of people think about, and this has nothing to do with the paranormal, but that stuff does absorb through the skin, or maybe people do know, but there was this story that I read, I think it was a couple of years ago. There was this scientist who was working with a really toxic mercury. Now, mercury is always very toxic, but she was working with a particularly toxic one, and she had all her PPEs on, which is your protective gear and gloves, and a tiny bit of this mercury, like she had a rip in her glove or something, but just a minute amount of this mercury, like, you know, the grain of a salt hit her skin and she ended up dying. It's crazy.
Wow. And they even talk about fluoride, you know, just with their toothpaste. You know, they say, well, fluoride's not going to kill you, but, you know, even a minute, it's not, you know, it's not healthy. I mean, it's been probably about almost 3 years that I quit using fluoride toothpaste. So, you know, I go to the health food store and I buy, you know, toothpaste that is not have fluoride in it. So, you know, just trying to be mindful and trying to be more aware of what you put in your body. I mean, back in the 60s, I grew up with Wonder Bread and bologna sandwiches. So how about you, Jason? Did you grow up with Wonder Bread and bologna sandwiches?
You know, when I grew up, I was kind of forced to eat healthy food choices. I don't know if you know this or not, but when I was young, you know, toddler, a couple of years or whatever, I was actually quite obese. So my mother put me on this Weight Watchers thing. So when I was growing up, while all the other kids out there were getting to eat, you know, the Captain Crunch and the Lucky Charms, I was stuck with boring old grape nuts and healthy stuff. But I wanted to mention, you were talking about fluoride toothpaste. You know, there's something wrong when you read the back of your toothpaste tube and it says, call the poison control if you consume more than what you normally put on your toothbrush. Yeah, it's toxic. The fluoride in toothpaste is derived from a compound called fluorine, which is highly toxic. I've always been skeptical of it. Now, up in Portland, they do not fluoridate the water. Last I heard, I did hear that they were, some people or organizations were trying to get the water fluoridated, but I don't know if that happened or not. I hope not. I don't know that the benefits outweigh the risks. I've done a little research on both sides. It does benefit the teeth, but I don't know if there have been any long-term studies on what it actually does for overall health.
Yeah, and the dentists really push it. You know, they really say, oh, you want some fluoride? You know, would you like to have a fluoride rinse? And I say, no, thank you. I don't want to do it. I don't want to go there. Well, it's not going to hurt you. We really encourage you because it's an anti-cavity measure. And they said, nope.
Well, it is a legitimate anti-cavity thing. Before fluoride was introduced, people had a lot more problems with their teeth. But, you know, it's not something I particularly want to put in my body. But at the same time, I'm not really concerned about it. We're bombarded with all sorts of other things that affect our bodies, and maybe fluoride should be at the top of the list. But for me, it's not something I spend a great deal on. Thought on.
Exactly. So anyway, Jason, if anybody would like to call and share your experiences or have any questions about the paranormal or metaphysical or any of that, and also too, if you would like to have a psychic reading, one question only, I would love to help you out. So if you want to call us at 1-215-383-3999. You can call us and talk to us and be live on air. So again, 1-215-383-3999.
And I also want to give a shout out to our listeners out in Central Oregon on 106.5 KITC FM and 107.1 KNCP. This show will be broadcast out there later in the week. And with that, I guess we can really delve into the world of the paranormal. And now, there was one other thing that wasn't paranormal that we were briefly discussing before the show, is you found some information on a flying car. I assume it's not like a Harry Potter flying car, right?
No, it's not. And I'm kind of curious because it doesn't say anything about what the picture looks like. It's like a cartoonish picture, but it says today, which is literally today, Toyota Motors made a groundbreaking announcement. They had the design and started to make the world's first flying car. And again, flying car, Toyota will complete it by 2020 and launch it on the opening of 2020 Olympics. It will create history. Just 3 years left, future is going to change forever. So I don't know if that's true or not. You know, the things that I post or you post, you know, it may not be our thoughts or our views on things, but just we post things and hope that maybe it might be some help and some interest to our viewers. But, yeah, I just read that and I want to share that. It's going to be interesting if that's the truth.
Yeah, could you imagine? That actually sounds like a nightmare in the sky instead of, you know, traffic accidents on the road.
I wonder if that's going to be a problem with the aviation.
Well, I don't imagine you're just going to be able to go down to your local dealership and pick up a flying car. I imagine there's going to be some sort of a licensure involved with that. You probably have to get a pilot's license. I mean, that could create so many issues in the airspace. There's a lot of space up there, but there's also a lot of air travel going on up there that we don't always see. So I can just see mass pandemonium as cars start falling out of the sky, crashing into each other. I mean, can you imagine an accident on the ground is typically survivable nowadays, but, you know, you start flying around a car, so a fender bender in the sky is probably not going to go go very well for the occupants.
Not at all. Oh, boy. It's going to be very exciting, but then again, it's going to raise more risk involved for those that are participating.
I don't typically like flying, so you're probably not going to see me in a flying car anytime soon. You know, I used to have to fly every week, and it just was a nightmare. So,
but, wow.
Yeah, I'm not going to be in a flying car anytime soon. But so interesting. I know that they have been working for decades on flying cars. I know some other people have developed flying cars. So it'll be interesting to see what this one looks like and how it works. But very interesting.
Yes, it is.
So I guess we can get into the world of the paranormal. I don't know if you had been looking online for any stories. I did find something that I can talk about, which I found a little bit interesting. Did you have anything else?
No, go ahead, Jason. Shoot.
So, were you a big... I suppose it's a dumb question. Everybody likes to play games, you know. And when I say play games, I'm not talking like emotional games with other people. I'm talking just about spooky games. Like, you have heard of, like, Bloody Mary and stuff like that, right?
I've heard of it, yes, I have.
Well, I found a bunch of games that I actually had never heard of before, which I thought was interesting, and I would just kind of go through them, and we can discuss some very interesting stuff, actually. Now, as I read them earlier, I kind of got the feeling that it's a bunch of, you know, nonsense, because some of them seem really far out there, but they're nothing that I would want to partake in. Just in case they're real. But we can go through some of them here, and you tell me what you think, okay?
Okay, shoot.
So this one's called Three Kings, and it actually kind of circulated on our subreddit post, and this one takes a little bit of involvement. It said that this game enables the player to gain access to another dimension, which that would be pretty sweet. So you have to play this game in a large room, preferably a basement, and the basement has to have a single flash of light coming through. Now, what exactly that means, I don't know. Maybe some light through a window. I guess if you're in a basement, probably not likely to have many windows, but there has to be some sliver of light somewhere. The other things you'll need, you also need a pack of candles, two large mirrors, three chairs, and an object from your childhood. So once you set everything up, you leave the door to the basement open, go to your bedroom, and set the alarm clock for exactly 3:30 a.m. And I found it interesting that they mentioned that it was at you have to set it for 3:30 a.m. because, as we've heard about in the past with other guests, that 3:30 a.m. is kind of the time when paranormal activity becomes more active, supposedly because it's a mock of the Trinity. And that's, I don't know, I guess it's the evil hour, whatever. But anyways, you set your clock for 3:30 a.m. And when the alarm goes off, if the alarm actually goes off, I don't know why it wouldn't, at 3:30 a.m. And so you go down to the basement, and if the things remain the way they are, you can proceed with the game. So basically, your alarm goes off at 3:30, you go down to the basement, and if all the conditions are right and nothing's been changed, you need to sit in the chair at exactly 33 a.m. with your lighted candles.
3:33?
Yeah. This is very in-depth. Like, it's down to the minute. It's this crazy stuff here. So you have your lighted candle in hand, and you want to make sure not to let the candle go out and protect it by your body. Don't let, like, air blow it out. So once you're seated, you look straight ahead into the darkness and never look into the mirrors or the candle. At this point, you'll start to feel and hear a presence. Some accounts stated that it felt like having a conversation with your conscious or an entity that manifests as part of you. It will talk to you about your past and your unresolved issues. Interesting stuff here.
Wow.
Some people have claimed that this ritual is some kind of psychological experiment that puts you in a lucid dream. So I'm going to lean more on the side of this is some sort of psychological effect other than paranormal. Anytime you sit in a basement when it's dark, holding a candle with mirrors and all that stuff, I can see it playing tricks on your mind. And so, yeah, so I'm not going to try it.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to ever go there myself. So, yeah, if you're really, I think you're really almost taking a chance, you know, dealing with that kind of, you're inviting things like that, aren't you? I think. Wow.
You possibly could. You know, it's funny because I live in a basement and there are two mirrors here. I think I have everything going for me to do this ritual. What happens if I just have two mirrors? I think it said three mirrors, right? Or did it say two?
Double trouble.
Oh, no. Oh, wait a minute. Let me retract that. Two large mirrors. Well, I have two large mirrors, so
oh my goodness.
Might be in trouble. Yeah. Maybe I can experiment with that tonight and I don't think so.
Let me know.
Yeah, I'll let you know how that works out. So I thought that was
interesting.
Well,
I don't know about you, Jason, but not to change the subject, but you know, it just seems like the energies. I don't know if it's you. You know, have you ever felt kind of off this week? I felt like that probably since last Saturday. It just, things have kind of been, the whole week now, it's been kind of off, you know, I feel off kilter and just things are just kind of, it just feels different.
I haven't felt that this week, but I know what you're talking about. I felt that before where something just feels different. Maybe
mm-hmm.
it's a glitch in the matrix. You know, there are people that believe that we're living in a computer simulation, and maybe you're becoming aware of that if that's true. And apparently there's some sort of science that suggests that we are living in one big computer illusion.
I wouldn't be surprised. Hey, anything's possible.
I would love to be able to cite the science behind that, but the words are too big for me, and I wouldn't be able to explain it well.
So what's the next one, Jason?
So there's something called the closet game. The objective of the closet game is to summon not just a spirit or ghost, but a demon. Basically, all you need to do is to step in a pitch-black closet, hold up an unlighted match, and say, "Show me the light or leave me in darkness." Once you begin, apparently you'll start to begin to hear whispering. And once you hear the whispering, you light the match immediately. In the event that you fail to light the match right away after hearing the whisper, it's said that something will grab you from behind and drag you to eternal darkness. The same thing would happen if you get curious enough to turn around and see what's behind you. If you didn't do any of those mistakes, open the closet door with your lit match in hand and slowly step outside. From then on, you must always make sure to have the lights on whenever you look inside your closet, since it is now permanently haunted by a demon.
Wow.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Whatsoever.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't wake up one morning.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah, I don't wake up one morning and think, gee, wouldn't it be a great thing to have my closet permanently haunted by a demon? Yeah, let me do that.
Well, you must be into satanic rituals or something, or the dark side. Yeah, they just, that's horrible. Wow. Okay.
So this one,
boy.
I
don't know if I want to go there. Nope.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't you try it for me, and you can you know what we could do to make
it
really interesting. Yeah, we could do it live.
I don't think so, Jason. I want to keep things on the lighter end of things and things of white light.
You don't want to do it live on the show, and then but we have to do it at
I
your
don't
place,
play.
Not mine.
Oh, geez. I don't know about that.
So I mentioned this one a little bit before, called Bloody Mary. Now, this one I have done as a child, and I don't recall anything happening. I don't know if people really know about it so much now, but back when I was younger, you know, in the 80s and stuff like that, it was really popular. And I don't remember anything happening. But for those of you out there that might be younger and not aware of Bloody Mary, it's a folklore legend. It's believed to be a vengeful spirit of a witch, and you basically summon her, and you stand like in your dark bathroom or whatever, and you chant Bloody Mary three times in front of a mirror while holding up a lighted candle. And then all you have to do after that is wait, and supposedly a woman covered in blood appears before you in the mirror. Some have stated that the participants of this game may have to endure Bloody Mary's wrath, which include getting strangled, cursed, or getting their souls taken. And
wow.
That's another one that's just like, why? Why would you?
I don't know. Who do you think these things were conjured up by somebody, Jason, or you do feel, you know, after reading that, do you think that these things have worked so they just, you know, hey, take your pick if you want to summon the demon. These are the things that you can do. I mean, what's your take of this?
I think that while I'm not totally a disbeliever, I am a believer in psychology, and I believe that people create these rituals and it somehow affects people's psychological state to the point of maybe even having visual and auditory hallucinations and stuff like that. You know, and I think I mentioned this quite some time ago on the show, and I don't remember the details, so I can't really cite them, but they were actually able to reproduce ghosts in a lab using psychology with participants, and I don't remember how they did it, but the people were touched by phantom hands, and it was all manipulating one's mind. They were able
wow.
to do that.
Wow. You know, Brian Ouellette talked about that in one of our shows, where these people can conjure up you know, demons. This is a type of demon. Do you remember him talking about that?
Yeah.
Hmm?
I do. Yes. I do believe
and
those, that.
And that's something you really. I don't think personally. I really don't think it's. You know, unless you know you understand the consequences and are prepared for the consequences. I think you have to be very careful in what you do and how you manifest. That's to me is a form of manifestation. Very much so. You got to be very, very careful.
I totally believe that. You know, we talked about haunted objects. I think people are haunted, and I think people are haunted by their own manifestations. And you know, and it could be consciously, or probably even more commonly, it could be unconsciously. You know, we watch scary movies and stuff like that, and that stuff plants in your brain, and who knows how that's going to manifest or if it's going to manifest.
It's true, very much so. Yes, I believe that true. I understand.
Now, that being said, having done paranormal investigations, I've captured things I can't explain, so I'm always leaving a sliver of light to say that we don't understand everything. There's always the possibility that we're wrong, and there's a possibility I'm wrong, so that's why I choose not to empower things by performing rituals and stuff like that to see if they're real. I'm sorry to say I'm not that brave.
Yeah, exactly. They're, you know, conjuring all elementals as they are created. They have their own thought. You know, yeah, you conjure it, but if you wish to take it back, it's like opening Pandora's box. How do you take it back once you create that part? You know, create that type of entity per se. I mean, that's one thing. There are people that are dealing with demons or primordials or wrathful spirits, but when you're dealing with something that is conjured and created. You know, that can take a life in its own, I should say.
I mean, if you think how, you know, when they're testing drugs, how they test placebos, to check the placebo effect. I mean, if you think of how our bodies can heal itself and the effects that you can have. I mean, if somebody's taking a narcotic, their body will feel like they're taking a narcotic because it's a placebo effect. Or if they have an infection and they're given a placebo, which is basically a sugar pill, but they think it's an antibiotic, their body will react accordingly. And so if our bodies are able to do that, why not also be able to create and manifest manifest things within our own mind, and who knows, possibly even manifest things in the physical world as well.
It's true. Very much so. Yep.
Yep,
wow.
Yep. So here's another one that to me is really out there, so it amuses me greatly. There is an elevator to another world, apparently. This is a game you can play, presumably with any elevator that has the numbers on the keypad thing. It's a game that originated in Korea, and it supposedly takes you to a different world via the elevator.
Okay.
So,
oh,
if anybody out there wants to just, you know, go to another world, apparently all you need to do is find a building with at least 10 stories, 10 floors, and that has an elevator. God, it's really that simple. Can you believe that? How great's
wow.
that? Yeah. So you have to make sure that there's no one else riding the elevator. Well, of course you want to make sure no one else is riding the elevator. You know, somebody's going up to return to work from lunch, and you're like, oh, I want to, and you're with them in the elevator, and you want to go to another world. You're probably going to freak out the other person.
Probably.
So, yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
So once you step inside the elevator, you have to press the buttons in this order. 4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5. You have to press that combination on the elevator's buttons. So once you do that, when the elevator reaches the fifth floor, a woman will enter, but you should never look at her and you should never speak to her. After the woman enters, press the button for the first floor. At this point, the elevator will begin ascending to the 10th floor. That makes no sense. If you press the first floor, why would it go to the 10th?
Wow.
Once you arrive at the 10th floor, you can get off the elevator to explore the different world. I'm sorry. I feel like that.
I'm sorry for laughing. Okay.
So it also says that this, you know, this mysterious woman that got on is going to ask you, where are you going? But you should never answer. Yeah. And the way you return, so once you go to this different world, you're probably thinking to yourself at some point after you explore, well, how do I get back home? Well, to do that, you go back inside the same elevator, use the same combination of numbers, the 4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5, and yeah, and it'll return you back. If, in the event, you pass out during the game, it's saying you will most likely find yourself waking up inside your own home. But make sure if that happens to look around, because it might not be your home anymore. So maybe you've crossed some dimensional paranormal or parallel universe or something. So, you know, that one I probably actually would try, because I think it's absolutely 100% ridiculous.
It's ridiculous that you don't think there's a chance that it might work, right?
Yeah. What about that one? Do you think that you would...
Oh, my gosh, Jason. No, thank you.
You wouldn't do it?
No. As a psychic medium, I'm just too aware of that kind of stuff, and I just don't want to push the... I don't want to push my limits on the other side.
Oh, my God.
Hey, when you try it out, let me know what happens, okay?
I don't know any buildings with 10 stories. I'm sure there are.
Well, you know, there's like a downtown Portland. There's like hotels. You know,
I avoid downtown like the plague, and so it would take a lot more than transdimensional traveling or whatever to get me to even venture downtown.
Wow.
Yeah. So now where I work has an elevator and it has 4 floors, but that probably won't work. Maybe instead of taking me to another world, if I do it with 4 floors and modify the numbers, it'll take me to, I don't know, maybe a different place on the planet or something.
Maybe. Maybe it could be you might have an ET encounter. No telling.
You never know.
But
so,
I wonder the combinations of the numbers when you were talking about the sequences. There's got to be a way, there's some kind of symbolism in the sequence or the numbers themselves. Because I know that being Asian myself, in between the Chinese and the Chinese believe in even numbers and the Japanese believe in odd numbers. And being that they're, each culture is different, there is some kind of symbolism with the either the combinations or the numbers itself. So that's why, you know, there's a formulation or something.
Well, maybe we should consult a numerologist and see what the numerology aspect of it is.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it's different depending on the culture because, like I say, as I just said, the Chinese believe in whole numbers, whereas the Japanese are into odd numbers. It's very different.
I don't believe in any numbers because I'm terrible at math, and I know I've mentioned that before. If it's not addition, subtraction, or division, forget about it. I tried to learn algebra and all that, and it's just way above my intellect.
Yeah, I had a hard time struggling. And, you know, the thing is I also believe that, you know, you have to believe, you know, they train you how to do algebra one, number two, but unless you're into that field, you know, what kind of good is it that you have to learn all these things? You know, I just don't understand. You don't apply it. I mean, I don't apply algebra to what I do, or even when I was a makeup artist, I didn't apply what algebra was. How about you, Jason?
I've never believed that I would ever use anything other than multiplication and subtraction and division. Now, I know there are some applications to it, particularly in the science fields where you got to know some of that stuff. And but, you know, I'm a working man. I don't I work in a laboratory, but I don't have to use that stuff because I'm not doing technical tasks. But
right,
I mean,
right.
If I need to, there's calculators for that sort of stuff, you know, graphing calculators.
Well, you know, talking about calculations and money, it was the other day, and I was at the grocery store, and it's funny how, I don't know if you noticed this, but when people count change, and I'm not trying to, you know, complain or anything, but this is just an observation, is that when people give hand out change, people don't know how to count back change. It's like they look at their computerized register, and whatever, $7.17 or $8 or, you know, $10.50, they look at how much they give you, and they give you the change back. Very rare do I see that people can actually count change.
That doesn't surprise me. I actually can count change, but that's about the extent
of it. Me too.
So I could.
I had a person who, you know, I gave him, I actually gave him, it was kind of messy. I gave him, it was like just an example. I don't know exactly what the amount was, but it was like 10.07, okay, just in, as an example, 10.07. So I gave her, I gave her 10.07, so I gave her 2 pennies, right? So it should have been 95 cents, 95, and then you count change back. Well, she looked at it, and she gave me, I don't know what she was thinking, but she gave me 3 pennies, so here I am counting it back. And she goes, "This is it." And I said, "You gave me the wrong change. You owe me 2 more cents." And she just was really, like, kind of dumbfounded and very confused. And I was
like,
trying to be
what?
Nice. And I said to her, I said, "It would be helpful if you can count the change back, because that's how you can catch your errors." So.
And did she give you attitude for trying to teach her how to count her change? Or
No, she's just like, oh, well, whatever. You know, it didn't seem to bother her. She's young, you know, very young, and, you know, she's just doing her job.
Yeah, there's people out there that are really good with psychology, and there's something called short change artists, and these are people that go around, and I've watched videos of it, and I still don't get it, and I've watched them over and over again. But what they do is, that, you know, they, like, hand you a 20 and say, you know, oh, can I get 2 fives and a 10 back? And then they hand you another bill, and this goes back and forth and back and forth until the guy leaves, and he's walking out with twice as much money as he had. It's the craziest thing ever.
So what he does is he confuses the cashier basically.
Yeah, but it's logically confused. It's not like like if you watch it, you're like, I don't understand it. Like I said, I've watched the videos multiple times, and I'm like, okay, how did this guy just walk out with twice as much money? Because I'm going step by step, and I don't see it, and it's just, it's weird.
Wow. We should take that. We should try that, Jason. No, I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
I would never do that.
It's crazy.
Goodness. So is there any more games that we need to be aware of?
There is. We can take a break if you have something you want to talk about.
Sure, just quickly. We'll do do a really quick topic here. It's called How to Encounter Ghosts, Where to Find Them, and What to Do. And it's number one, before you join a ghost hunting group, and maybe you can help with your comments because, you know, you were in a paranormal team. It said you've accomplished a lot in the past sessions. What you would like to do when you join a ghost hunting team is you ask questions. You ask questions about their policies, beliefs, practices. Don't feel as if you're being too pushy and they might not like you. Your questions, their answers are very important. Don't assume that the group is a good match for you just because a friend is a member or you've had a few of their investigations and they seem nice. Focus of these talkers, the kind of locations. Where they investigate, any sites they prefer to avoid. Example, several episodes of Ghost Hunters, a couple people said absolutely positively will not investigate cemeteries. By contrast, I think haunted cemeteries at the very least are an ideal place to learn and practice investigation techniques. So what do you think of that, Jason?
I think those are some very, you know, good basic guidelines.
Okay.
I think
the second thing is the spiritual context of the group. Many ghost hunting teams are members of the same church, or they may be all pagans. If religion might be an important part of how they deal with ghosts, find out before you join. If you're inexperienced, in your paranormal team, how were you brought together?
How was my group brought together?
Yes.
It was me and another guy. We both had an interest, and I was the one that wanted to start the group. So we just kind of started it, and then we found some other people and psychics and stuff like that. And I did want to say, not all groups are created equal. I have had experience with other groups. There was one time a guy wanted me to come with his group to an investigation of some person's house. And so I get there and I meet them, and they don't have any equipment at all. And of course I have the equipment, you know, the electromagnetic detectors, cameras, all this kind of stuff. And so I thought that was odd. And so we went and did this investigation, and they had no idea what they were talking about. The homeowner asked them a very basic question. I don't remember what it was. I think it was something like what does EMF stand for, EVP? And they had no idea. And so the person turns to me and asks me, or like looks at me to answer the question, and I did. And so it's kind of dangerous when you're interacting with people that have no idea what they're doing, because they put themselves in these situations, whether the location's haunted or not, and they really can do a disservice to the occupants of the house by not using their critical thinking skills to find causes for alleged paranormal events. And,
make the situation worse if it is a haunting, Jason?
Well, absolutely, because you get groups that go in there and say, oh, yeah, you know, the reasons you're hearing these noises is you have a demon in your basement, so they get freaked out, move out, and it causes all sorts of problems when in actuality, the supposed sounds could have real-world causes, you know, pipes, water heaters, all sorts of things. And so it's really important for investigative teams to be able to have some sort of investigative skills to look for the paranormal as the last possible possibility and start looking for, you know, more so realistic reasons.
And I have a question for you. If you hear the floors creaking once in a while, could that be that the house is selling as a paranormal investigator?
Oh, yeah. I mean, houses settle. Nothing's static 100% of the time. I mean, foundations settle, grounds settle. You know, there's constant earthquakes that we don't feel. There's structural problems with houses. There's the effect of the outside world, you know, wind and contraction and expansion of metal from heat sources within the house. I mean, it's the possibilities are endless.
Okay. Good to know that. And
yeah.
So the other thing is the team's usual investigation meeting schedule. If your Saturday nights are reserved for dates, but the ghost hunting group schedules investigations, then it's not a match. Or if you like to start a research just before dusk and come home by 10, but the team usually arrives at sites around 9 or 10, that's not your match either. Membership requirements. Some teams have rigid rules. Members must attend certain organizational meetings plus a certain number of investigations per month that may have dues, official group titles, and responsibilities, and so on. Find out early. So did you have there is membership rule. That's getting really big, I think, sounds like to me.
I mean, there's rules, but with our group, I mean, there's no formal rules. It's just kind of common sense. The way it would work that we would do it is before we even started the investigation, we would go in with our meters and stuff like that and just kind of get a baseline reading of the electromagnetic radiation. For the people that aren't aware, I mean, anytime you're running electricity through something, it creates an electromagnetic field. And so we go through the house and find out what the numbers are in the particular rooms and stuff like that. Also, we make sure that your cell phones are off because your cell phones are constantly transmitting data, not constantly, but intermittently transmitting data. And those also can affect equipment. But the other thing I wanted to mention was, aside from the risks of investigating the paranormal, aside from the risks of spiritual risks or paranormal risks with demons and ghosts and all that kind of stuff that we've heard about in the past, there's a lot of other risks involved, liability kind of things. I know investigative teams that have done investigations and been accused of stealing stuff, and there's stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of mental illness out there. And so if you go into somebody's house, you could be accused of things that you didn't do. And so you need to make sure that you have the correct documentation, waivers, in case you get injured or you damage something. You know, you knock off some ancient vase or something that's worth $1 billion. You got to make sure your bases are covered because you can get hurt doing the paranormal. The people have died doing it. There are people that have been hit by cars. There's people that have been bitten to death by spiders that have died. There's people that have, suffered all sorts of injuries. And so while it is fun and informative to do investigations, you just got to keep in mind that it's dangerous. You can be sued. You can be arrested. You really got to cover your bases.
So having a waiver, does it absolve you from any type of lawsuit, or is just added a layer of protection?
I don't think it necessarily would absolve you from, you know, a lawsuit for sure. I mean, attorneys can always fight around anything, but I think it offers a layer of protection, and not only for yourself, but also for the client, the homeowner.
And especially when you go into other people's house, and if the person is not stable in the first place, whether it's legitimate or not the case, you know, you don't know who you're dealing with. And even if you think you're dealing with the same person, you just never know. And you don't know who's, you know, unless you know your team very well, you got to protect yourself and protect the client also.
Yeah, to me, nowadays, it seems to me that it's just more risk than it's worth. I've always, you know, going through life, I've always been really good at keeping myself out of trouble because I have a lot of critical thinking skills and I can kind of foresee events and I can read people due to my investigative background and not paranormal investigating, but my actual investigative for work background. And so those kind of experiences have always boded well for me with keeping myself out of trouble. So I think it's risky. For me now, I wouldn't do it. It's just too risky. The liability is too great, and crazy things can happen.
And nowadays, there's so many paranormal teams, even to this day. They're forming left and right, you know. There's just a lot of these teams that are wanting to, you know, help other people or you know, they're whether they're experienced or not. It used to be very rare, I would imagine, but now with the popularity of Ghost Adventures and Paranormal Lockdown and all these shows, I think that really kind of hyped up the interest too.
Well, yeah, because you get people out there that have $1,000 to spend on equipment, get a few buddies together, watch, you know, season one and two of Ghost Hunters, and now they're paranormal investigators. They go out, they get business cards, they might take an ad, they go out and paint their, you know, their van with whatever their team name is, and now they're professional ghost hunters. And boy, I definitely think that if somebody's interested in doing that, that they should spend some time doing some investigations with an established group before they go out and just start knocking on people's doors and investigating people's homes.
Oh, that's true. Very much so. Wow. Okay, Jason, go ahead. And if you want to continue, what's the other ones and the games?
Something called the Hooded Man Ritual. It's kind of similar to the elevator ritual in the sense that it takes you to a different world. And, well, wow, did you ever think that there's so many ways you could go to a different world? It's amazing. Seems like this is what most of these games do. They transport you to a different world or dimension. Craziness. So this one requires you to perform a cleansing ritual prior to the start of the game, which can be burning sage or spreading salt around your front door and windows and stuff like that. When the night comes, you go to a room, and there has to be a telephone in the room. And apparently there are detailed instructions you can find online. But basically, you make a call for a cab. I wonder if Uber works. I wonder if you can use the app Uber to get transported to a different world. Once you call the cab, apparently you'll see a black cab parked outside your house. This makes no sense. If you exit the building, you climb into the cab's empty back seat, and you lock the door behind you, and you go to sleep. What?
Who made that up?
There has to be more detailed instructions, and they're saying this is kind of an overview because it's ridiculous to say that you go into a dark room, you call a cab, the cab's going to show up, it's going to be black, you go inside, lock the door, and you take a nap. So there has to be something more. Okay, so
that's strange.
You climb into the back seat of the cab, you lock the door, like I said, and you go to sleep. If you awake and your watch reads exactly 3:30 a.m., then you'll find yourself falling asleep a second time. So I guess you've taken a nap in the back of the cab. You wake up. Oh, look, it's 3:30 a.m. You go back to sleep. And once you wake up again, the cab will be on an unfamiliar highway. And you'll notice a hooded man behind the wheel. Some accounts have stated that other passengers may get inside the cab and sit with you, but you should never pay attention to them. Wow.
Okay. Wow.
If you want to end your ride, you just lean closer to the hooded man's ear and whisper, "I have reached my destination." You will fall asleep again. What is this person have, narcolepsy or something? That's a lot of sleep involved with this game. So once you tell the hooded man you have reached your destination, you'll fall asleep and wake up in your house, and after which you have to go to the telephone, dial a number, and say, thank you for the ride.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that you, what phone number? You just dial a random number? Can you imagine somebody at 5 o'clock in the morning is going to get a call and hear somebody on the other end of the line saying, thanks for the ride? They're going to be like, what?
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. Wow. I wonder who wrote that. Okay.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I don't, you know, I'm of the opinion that if I call a cab at night, that I'm just going to get a cab. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Very, very strange stuff.
Wow. Okay.
Here's another one for you. And I see we're kind of running out of time, but we got a little bit more time here. This one's called One Man Hide and Seek. One Man Hide and Seek, which originated from Japan, and it's called Hitori Kakurenbu, is a paranormal game where you're playing hide and seek against a spirit-possessed doll. What you need to do is take a stuffed doll, remove all of its stuffing, and replace it with rice along with a piece of your fingernail. You sew up the doll with a red thread and wrap the remaining thread around the doll. So you sew it up and wrap it around in a thread. You have to give the doll a name, place it in a tub filled with water, and proceed it to take it to your hiding place. So I guess you hide it somewhere. You turn off the lights and switch the television on. Take a mouthful of salt water, but don't swallow it. Get out of your hiding place and start looking for the doll, which is probably not in the tub anymore. So I guess it disappears from where you hid it, and you have a mouthful of salt water, huh? So once you eventually will find the doll somewhere else, you pour the salt water over it. I guess you're spitting salt water over it. You allow it to dry, then burn it and discard the remains. So ridiculous. You want to take note of the static on the television during the game, too. So I guess you're going to have the TV onto a static channel. And I don't even know if those exist anymore because there's all the television's all satellite now. So apparently this summons potential unwanted visitors. I don't get it at all.
Wow.
That just sounds
I think, you know, Jason, this, to me, it's your intent. I think that you can do something very simple, and if your intent is to go and summon or conjure up anything that's evil, I'm sure that it can exist because I really feel that it does exist, just like yin and yang, it does exist. And if you feed off that energy, you're going to create that energy. That's how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, rituals, any kind of ritual with anything, just reinforces a thought or belief pattern. So if you think something's going to happen, I pretty much will guarantee you something's going to happen.
Exactly. And I don't want to go there. It's not that because I'm afraid of that. I mean, I just don't, to me, that's not where I want to be or want to be an impact into the world. I want to be able to add value in a positive direction, not something negative. There's so much negativity that we can focus on. Why conjure that up? I think if our world is so rampant with negativity as it is, why do we want to conjure more stuff like that?
Absolutely. And there are a couple more on this list, but they're equally ridiculous, and it looks like we've only got 7 minutes left. So
yes. Okay. Well, quickly, it just says something about a personality. So I'm going to go back into being careful about joining a paranormal team. And one of the things is, as we were talking about earlier, personalities. And an assertive ghost hunter may seem impressive at first, and after a few ghost hunts, him or her constant comments can become very annoying. This is one of the many reasons why several ghost hunts with a group before agreeing to join. Some people become chatty when they're nervous. Others want to be left alone in silence. In between, some investigators like to exchange notes but avoid unnecessary distractions. A few groups cheerfully mix ghost hunting and musical chairs dating within the group. if this is not your cup of tea or style, it can be very irritating. So for some reason, many ghost hunters seem to be smokers. And maybe it just seems that way. If you're carpooling to sites, make sure it's the one in the car you agree about smoking or not smoking in the vehicle. During a three-hour commute, tempers can flare if their rules are not established ahead of time. The most common issues amongst paranormal teams, and there can be, is some ghost hunters think it's okay to have a beer or two before an investigation, number one. Number two, some bring their small, fussy children when they can't find a babysitter. And number three, some ghost hunters don't hesitate to bring along a skeptical or a giggly date. So before committing to a regular membership or joining a ghost hunting group, spend time with them and what kind of interest, find out what their interests are. That's pretty good. I mean, to me, like you said, it's just all a matter of common sense, you know?
Absolutely, and I would add some other things. Is there are groups that go into investigations where there's just a bunch of people in the house or wherever they're investigating. You want the minimal amount of people in there because it generates noise. There really should only be one or two people at a time. So people need to, you know, stay outside.
And preferably
because
the house is empty, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we used to like to do was at some point in the investigation, we would just keep the audio recorders and the cameras rolling with nobody in the house. And
wow.
That was always good. And we had captured stuff that way, too.
This last part I want to conclude is, it says in big, bold letters, please be careful and watch out for scammers, con artists, and criminals. They are a tiny minority, but you should know what to look for. In the past 10 years that I've been on a paranormal team, I've encountered 3 con artists, 2 convicted child molesters, and some criminals. So be careful who you're having in your team, which is very good. That's very enlightening.
Yeah, there's people out there that'll go into a house and they'll say, oh, my God, you're possessed by a demon or your house is haunted, but don't worry, we can take care of this problem for you, you know, but it's going to cost $500 and blah, 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 whatever the amount is. And
wow.
So they basically prey on vulnerable people, much like the IRS scammers do, you know, where they call up your phone and you have a warrant for your arrest. Oh, can I say something about that that's completely not paranormal? I was at work the other day, and a coworker comes in, and he's visibly distraught. And, you know, I asked him what's going on, and he said that he had a warrant for his arrest, that the IRS, he had an IRS warrant. And so he was telling me about it. He had gotten this phone call and blah, 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 blah. And as we all know, we get these calls that originate from like India and stuff like that, these scammers in Pakistan, and they try and scam people out of money claiming to be the IRS, and there's a warrant for your arrest and you need to pay this money or send a Walmart gift card and we'll make it go away. And so people are kind of wising up to these scams that are going on out there that have been going on for a very long time. Some people still fall victim to it, but the difference with this scam and him was that these people are also sending out letters, official-looking letters. So what they do now is they send out this letter that looks like it's from the IRS saying you have a warrant and you need to call this number, and then they follow it up with a phone call to make it all seem more legitimate. And let me just say it, that if you have a warrant for your arrest, the last thing any government organization is going to do is tell you about it. They're just going to show up at your door. So I get real sick and tired of all these scammers. You know, there's these scammers that call saying they're from Microsoft and there's a virus on your computers and stuff like that and try and get you to – my God. So what these scammers do, maybe they don't care, but they – create a tremendous amount of stress for people. And I truly hope and believe that there's karma and this comes back to haunt these people. I understand they're poor, they need to feed their family, but at the expense of somebody else, it's completely wrong and it needs to be dealt with. I wish governments would unify and get these people and lock them up, because the damage that they cause, not just financially, but emotionally and on every level, it's irreversible.
Isn't it horrible? And, you know, even in a smaller scale, you know, we're looking at even like every day, and I'm sure everybody has gotten this, where they have robocalls. I mean, to me, those are scams too. You know, they'll make it look like, they'll make it even look like, I've even had calls where they'll even look like it's a local number, and you answer the phone, and you know it's a scam. And they've really gotten very tricky anymore. You know, it's not like one of those where you know, oh, I can't identify the name. Now they even use, local numbers to, you would think that they would, you know, be somebody local trying to call you or, you know, no, it's a robocall. So what you do is I suggest that you don't answer them. Let them go, because I think they're computer generated anyway, but I get a feeling that they kind of fish out who's home and who's not home. So if you're not familiar with the number, let it go into voicemail and you know, you can go and delete it.
Yeah, you know, you can spoof numbers. You know, they can make it to where it looks like the FBI is calling you on your caller ID. I mean, the technology is amazing. There's all sorts of apps people can use to fake you out. There's apps where you can basically spoof text messages, and it's just craziness. But anyways, it looks like
we're
out of time.
So, yeah. That's crazy. That's too bad.
That's too unfortunate.
Bad. Wow.
But we're out of time.
Boy, this whole hour has gotten fast.
Super fast. So unless you have anything else, I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. And we'll be back 8 p.m. West Coast time on Blog Talk Radio. Thank our listeners at 106.5 KITC FM and 107.1. And I hope everybody, and I'm sure Sherry does too, we both hope that everybody has a fantastic week. And unless you have anything else, Sherry, I guess we'll wrap it up.
No, thank you guys for listening and participating and just supporting us. We appreciate you. Thank you very much. Have a nice week.
Hope everybody has a great week, and good night, everyone.
All right. Peace.